then in some cases they kind of fabricate variations on the philosophy of Krishna consciousness.
Which sound like Krishna consciousness. So innocent devotees who are not really so knowledgeable in Krishna consciousness, they may hear these ideas and think, oh yes, very good. You know, this is a nice Krishna conscious idea. One such idea, if you've got the Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, I don't know if you've all got that. It's available now. We have the single volume Prabhupada Lilamrita. It's the entire six volumes, which Ezra was previously published. So the whole, all six in one. Very, very interesting. So somewhere in there, there's the story of how one group of devotees back in, I think, 1971 or so, in the very early days, they somehow or other managed to create the philosophy that Prabhupada was actually an incarnation of Krishna, and we should all accept him as an incarnation of Krishna. And they were in New Vrindavan at the time, and they started propagating that philosophy amongst the devotees. And somehow or other, some of the very innocent devotees, they accepted the idea. But when Prabhupada heard about it, he exclaimed that these devotees, that the original group who developed the idea, that they were actually poisoning the other devotees in a philosophical sense or a spiritual sense. Like, for example, if you hear criticism or if you hear blasphemy of devotees, then you may not know one way or the other whether whatever is being said, whether it's true or not. But someone is saying that, oh, this devotee is like this and that, speaking critically. So you may not know. But you're hearing. So that sound vibration goes in and it affects the state of one's heart. It actually contaminates one's heart. So this we refer to as becoming poisoned spiritually. There was one interesting example. When the first group of devotees went to India with Srila Prabhupada back in the very early 70s, then some of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers didn't appreciate Srila Prabhupada at all. And they would always try to minimize what Srila Prabhupada had done in preaching Krishna consciousness by trying to rationalize that he was successful for this reason or that reason. You know, just different. Like one of them, just as an example, they knew, of course, that Srila Prabhupada had a history in business. He'd been in the medical or the pharmaceutical business in his household days. So, and he was an accomplished businessman. So one of his godbrothers offered the idea that his success was because he's a good businessman. So there are ideas like this. So many ideas. So when this first group of devotees went to India with Srila Prabhupada, they were staying in Mayapur, and one day they heard that there was some function going on in one of the temples of one of Prabhupada's godbrothers on the other side of the river, on the other side of the Ganges, in Navadweep town. So a group decided to go, and they went to that function, and there are people coming, stepping up and making speeches about this and that. And they noticed that, oh, here some of the ISKCON devotees, Westerners, they were all Americans, and they're all very new devotees, they really didn't know very much. So one man, he got up and he started speaking in English, making rather snide sort of remarks and critical remarks about Srila Prabhupada and about the devotees who were there listening, and so many things like that. And the devotees just sat there. They didn't really know what to make of it all or how to react. So they just sat there and then they went back. So that evening, someone told Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada actually had asked, where are these devotees? And he'd heard they'd gone to one of his godbrother's temples. So when he got back, he called for someone and asked, what did they say? So then that devotee related what he could remember of the talks there, and particularly these nasty critical remarks about Prabhupada and his preaching mission. So then Prabhupada called in the devotees who'd gone over there, and Srila Prabhupada told them that you have heard all this, you listened, so it went into your ear and it actually went into your hearts. So Prabhupada said that you're all now permanently spiritually scarred. Permanently spiritually scarred. There's in Nectar of Devotion. How many of you have read Nectar of Devotion? Perhaps you could put your hands up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You should try and read these books. Very important. Srila Rupa Goswami talks about how one should react if one hears blasphemy, this poisonous sound vibration, critical, nasty talks about other devotees and Krishna consciousness. So Srila Rupa Goswami makes some extremely radical statements. He says that, First of all, what you can do is, you should try and defeat the person. Don't just allow yourself to become a passive audience, but defeat the person. In that way, you nullify the poisonous effect of what they say. Then Rupa Goswami says, he suggests that if you like, you can also cut out the person's tongue. Probably a pretty effective measure. Mightn't be so easy to do. Then he says, if you can't do either of those, then you should commit suicide. And if you can't sort of get yourself together to do that, then at least you should immediately leave the place. So of course, you know, on a very practical level for us in our daily lives, committing suicide, we wouldn't really recommend that. Trying to cut out their tongue, we wouldn't really recommend that. Definitely you should try and defeat the person. If you can't do that, because sometimes it's very difficult and you can get into a very nasty situation, big arguments and things like that. So at least you should immediately leave the place, immediately. And hopefully you'll avoid hearing too much, and you'll avoid being affected too much. But it has a very real effect. They say, there's a saying in Vaishnavism, that the tongue is a very powerful weapon, and the ear is a very vulnerable target. In other words, if the tongue is in range, if the tongue and the ear, if the ear is in range of the tongue will hit the target. You know? It's not that you have to take aim. It's just by being in range, just by the ear being in range, the tongue will find the target. So this sound vibration, just as transcendental sound vibration, like the Hare Krishna mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This has such a wonderful purifying effect. The more you chant and the more you concentrate on the chanting, the more you'll feel, you'll experience very clearly that my heart is becoming cleansed of disturbing influences, illusory ideas, you know, the tendency toward becoming lusty, angry, greedy, envious. All these things are like contaminations within the heart, within the mind. And they become cleansed away through the chanting. Because the sound vibration, it has that potency. Sound vibration has that potency. So all sound vibration has potency of some sort. Like you may know people who live in cities, in the centers of cities, and they're hearing traffic noise and so much noise all day, that generally they end up in very disturbed states of mind. According to the Vedas, if you hear the sound of running water, that makes the mind peaceful. So different sounds have different types of effects. And spiritual sound has a very wonderful spiritual effect, cleansing effect, and one becomes very blissful. And this mundane, envious, is there perhaps another microphone? Or is there just one? Hare Krishna. What are we going to do? Are you going to fix it? Okay. So, this poisonous sound vibration, particularly blasphemy and hearing criticism of devotees, it has this poisonous effect. Even actually it's stated in Padma Purana, and Rupa Goswami quotes the verse in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion, goes, Avaishnava Mukod Geranam Putam Harikatam Ritam. Then I forget the rest of the verse, but the verse is basically saying that one should never hear even the holy names from envious people, avaishnavs, non-devotees. Milk touched by the lips of a serpent has a poisonous effect. So similarly, even the holy name of the Lord chanted by envious persons, it also has a poisonous effect on the heart. So here we're going to discuss about Kaliya. So Kaliya represents that anatha. And it's something we should be very conscious of and something we should be very, very careful about. We have made some notes here from Garga Samhita that in his last life, which was in the first Manvantara, in this day of Brahma, that means a long time ago. First Manvantara means about, or we're halfway through the day of Brahma now, so it means probably 2 billion years ago. That was his previous life, Kaliya's previous life. He was a sage, a devotee actually, named Vedashira. And he was cursed by another sage. For some reason, he wouldn't allow that sage to use his ashram, to meditate in his ashram. So that other sage became angry with him and cursed him. That you're angry for no reason. You hiss just like a snake. So become a snake. Then because they were both great devotees, Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he appeared on the scene and told this Vedashira who'd received the curse that, don't worry, in this lifetime in which you're a snake, at the end of it, I'll come and place my lotus feet on your head. And in this way you'll be cleansed of the effects of this curse. So then, Vedashira took birth as Kaliya, and he took birth in the first generation of snakes to appear in the universe. So we're talking about right in the beginning of the universe. That means that by the time Krishna appears 5,000 years ago, Kaliya, he's been in that body of Kaliya for at least 2 million years or so. And very unpleasant experience, no doubt. So, in your own time, you could read the description that we've given from Krishna book. I'll just go through the story briefly now, and I'll make some other points which we get from the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam itself and from the commentaries of the previous acharyas on this particular pastime. And I'll also read a little excerpt from one book by Srila Sanatan Goswami, Brihad Bhagavatamrita, in which he gives a little bit more in-depth narrative of the story itself. So, Krishna was out herding the cows with all the cowherd boys. Balaram was not there. Anyone know why? Or any suggestions? Why was Balaram not there? Mother Manjari.
Because he knew that no harm
could
come to
Krishna.
No. Balaram had been the Shesta of her.
But why did he not go out herding cows? He generally would. It was his birthday. So his mother had kept him at home and for their some sort of celebration and ceremonies. That was also the case in the Brahma Vimohana Leela. You may know that that day Lord Krishna was out herding the cows and Balaram was also not there. So Balaram was not aware what happened, but later on, when the year during which the cowherd boys were held and the calves were held by Brahma, and Krishna expanded himself into their forms, during that year, Lord Balaram was thinking these are just the cowherd boys and the calves, as usual. But as the year was coming towards an end, he noticed how affectionate the cows and the parents were to the calves and the cowherd boys. And he thought that they only have this affection for Krishna, but now they're manifesting it for their own children, their own offspring. So this is very strange. And then he thought, this indicates actually that these cowherd boys and calves are actually forms of Krishna, which was true. So then he asked Krishna, what is this really the case? And then Krishna explained. So anyway, this is also the case in this pastime of the subduing of Kaliya. So Krishna was there with the cowherd boys and calves and cows, and suddenly they felt very thirsty, so they went to the banks of the Yamuna at what is now called Kaliya Ghat. Those of you who have been to Vrindavan would know Kaliya Ghat. They all went to the river Yamuna, the cowherd boys and the cows, and they all simultaneously drank water. Then suddenly they all simultaneously dropped dead. Our acharyas make the comment that they must have drunk simultaneously. Otherwise, and if some had gone first and the others had waited and something like that had occurred, then the later ones would have seen that the first ones to drink had dropped dead and they would have stopped. But they all dropped dead. So therefore the conclusion is that they must have all drunken simultaneously. Now, their bodies appeared lifeless, but actually we understand that the cowherd boys' bodies and the cows' bodies also, they're completely spiritual. Satchidananda, Vigraha. They all have eternal bodies, not material bodies like ours. So how come they actually died? actually because it's Krishna's arrangement. Krishna's arranging this pastime because he wants to achieve a specific end, which we'll talk about when we get up to towards the end. So Krishna caused, even though the cowherd boys and cows, their bodies were completely spiritual, he caused them to apparently be dead. Then Krishna gave them his special glance, nectarian glance, and revived them. And they all realized that we were just dead, but now we're alive. So what happened? They were asking each other. And there were one or two suggestions. Maybe some Brahmin came who knew how to cure snake bites or to cure poisoning, to bring people back from dead. But then one boy suggested, no, it must have been Krishna. And then they all immediately agreed, yes, it must have been Krishna. And our acharyas say that the way that they concluded so unanimously and so, like, immediately, even though they didn't know at all, there was no evidence, that they couldn't say how they'd been brought back to life, but they immediately concluded it was Krishna. So this is evidence that, Sanatana Goswami says, this is evidence that they are Mahabhagavats, great elevated pure devotees, because they don't see any cause for anything other than Krishna. So then Krishna noticed that the waters of the Yamuna were terribly poisoned. Terribly poisoned. Actually, Kaliya had been living there for many yugas. Millions of years, Kaliya had been living there. It's actually in a lake which was extending out from the main flow of the river. That lake is called the Kaliyadaha Lake. It doesn't really exist now, but you can see where it is when you go to Vrindavan. And he'd been spewing out so much poison, and that poison was so powerful that this big lake, the lake was 8 miles across, that this big lake was boiling due to the effect of the poison. It was at a boiling point, and the poisonous fumes were going up, and any birds that flew over the top would immediately drop dead into the lake. So Krishna, he wasn't happy at all that the Yamuna, which is so dear to him, was poisoned so badly. So immediately decided to correct the situation. So then Krishna climbed one old kadamba tree that was there, walked out on one branch which was extending over the lake, and jumped in. Now that kadamba tree is still there. In Vrindavan, it's said that every tree is a kalpavriksha tree. Of course, you get all sorts of trees, including many like young trees and some trees which are not very nice. They have a lot of thorn trees which are not very nice at all. So they're all wish-fulfilling trees, kalpavriksha trees. But we understand that the old trees in Vrindavan, or in the whole of Vrajmandala, there's a number, not a large number, but there's a number of very old trees which were there in many cases at the time that Krishna was present, and they witnessed his pastimes and they were touched by him, like this particular kadamba tree. Krishna walked out on this branch, so his lotus feet contacted that branch. So the understanding is that these old kalpavriksha trees, they're particularly powerful wish-fulfilling trees. So the devotees, when they go to these trees, they always offer their obeisances, place their heads at the lotus feet of the trees. Lotus feet of the trees means their roots. And it's very nice. It's very nice. How many of you have been to Vrindavan? Oh, a number of you. So you've probably seen that tree. And we hope that the rest of you will get the chance to go before too long and you can see the same tree. So Krishna dived in head first. But before he dived, he did something which is like a very characteristic activity of Krishna before he goes to deal with some tough situation. Anyone know what that thing that Krishna did was? Yes, he tightened his belt. Tightened his belt. And then he dived in head first. Now, of course, Krishna is just a small boy. 5 or 6 years old, 7 years old, something of that sort. Just a small boy. But Krishna is the absolute truth. So when Krishna, the absolute truth, hit the water, it wasn't just like when a little boy jumps in and goes splash. But Krishna, there was a tremendous noise. And it produced, Krishna produced a tidal wave. And this big tidal wave went rolling out across the Kaliya Lake, Kaliya Daha Lake. And Kaliya was way over on the other side. Suddenly Kaliya heard this terrible crashing noise. He was wondering what happened, what's going on. And suddenly this tidal wave came and hit him. So he was very upset. Someone's invaded my lake. I'm going to get this person. So, Ashi Kaliya. Kaliya is known as Chakshu Shrava. Any Sanskrit experts know what that means? Chakshu Shrava. One who hears through his eyes. He has no ears. He hears through his eyes. So he heard. Then he went over to see what was going on, and Krishna was swimming over. So they met. As soon as they met, Kaliya grabbed Krishna, entwined him in his coils, and was tried to crush the body of Krishna. And Krishna, even though he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead and he's omnipotent, but Krishna appeared to be pinned there, unable to move, in this crushing grip of Kaliya. Now, obviously, Krishna, no one can grab him like that and hold on to him without him being able to move. So here again we see this is Krishna's lila. He wants to achieve a particular end. And the end he wants to achieve is that he wants to increase the attachment of the devotees for him through their getting into great anxiety about his safety, through them becoming concerned for his well-being. So even though they become devastated, actually, in their anxiety, but it actually heightens their love for him. And this is what Krishna wants to achieve. Actually, Srila Prabhupada did a similar thing. He said to one of his godbrothers, Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj, who was one of the few of Prabhupada's godbrothers who were actually friendly to him, right at the end, just before he left this world, he said, it was actually Tamal Krishna Maharaj who was begging Prabhupada not to go on the bullock cart ride circumambulation of Govardhan Hill. Tamal Krishna Maharaj was pleading with Prabhupada, please don't do it. And he was crying. It was very, very, very intense situation. So Prabhupada turned to Krishnadas Maharaj, Krishnadas Babaji Maharaj, and said, you see, these devotees are so attached to me. And I'm dealing with them like that, like this, just to increase their love for me. This is one of the duties of the spiritual master, that sometimes a spiritual master may chastise the devotee or treat the devotee apparently a little, the disciple apparently a little roughly. But it's not that he's being inconsiderate or unkind, but to chastise or to help the devotee to become more concerned and more like to develop some anxiety that I must become a better devotee, I must improve myself like that. So Krishna was actually wanting that to happen, that the love of the Brijvasis, which was already so great, that it would increase even further through them getting into anxiety for his well-being.